This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Wednesday means Leah Hextall joins us. How are you?
Well, I'm better than Garnet Hathaway right now, I believe.
Yes, luckily when we started recording this, it came down that he got a 3-game suspension, and I know you're red hot about this.
Well, you know, Don, come on. 3 games? I'm sorry. That's a joke. It's a joke. And all respect to George Parros and NHL Department of Player Safety, but when you look at the fact that 2 years ago in the playoffs in 2017, Boston Bruins forward Brad Marchand was allowed to lick a player not once, but twice. Once against Toronto in the first round, Leo Komarov, the second time against Tampa Bay with Ryan Callahan. And he gets nothing for licking someone in the playoffs except for a phone call from the director of hockey ops, Colin Campbell, to say, knock it off or else we're going to have to do something. And then Garnet Hathaway comes in and gets 3 games after being sucker punched by Eric Gabranson. And that's my big problem with this. The Marchand thing is one item. Obviously, they're looking to send a message here that things like this, players stop doing it. But Gabranson gave him a sucker punch when he was defenseless, not expecting it. And this is a league that continually says that it is trying to change the way players play to eliminate trauma to the head. And that's a blatant headshot. How come he is not appearing in front of the Department of Player Safety? The inconsistencies within the National Hockey League continue. And they have to start to figure this out in order to gain any reputable room to grow and actually to teach their players what's acceptable and what's not. But if I'm Garnet Hathaway, I think this is an absolute joke that he got 3 games.
Well, you're so right when you bring up what happened with Marchand, because he's licking people, and it's it is something that he intentionally did, that he knew he was going to do. The spitting action is a reflex, as you said, because he was sucker punched. The other part of it too is that there's constraints, right? Gabranson has him. The linesman has him. He just got sucker punched. He can't maneuver at all. Again, I'm not defending him. It was a terrible thing to do. He apologized for it, but it's probably just the optic of it, you know, spitting at someone, the ultimate disrespect. But when you bring in the Andrew Marchand stuff, Andrew Marchand is somebody who used to work for us. So I always make that mistake. when you bring in the Brad Marchand stuff, I mean, it brings up, so many different levels of it, and you're absolutely right. I know that was the playoffs, so what happens in the regular season isn't equal to the postseason, but as you said, he just got a phone call during the playoffs, and Hathaway gets suspended for 3 games. And I like what the NHL has done, Leah, in trying to eliminate the fighting, because how can you sit there and say you care about the health and well-being of players, you care about headshots, and yet you're going to let two people pummel each other in the head? I understand that, but the way that they wrap these players up now, this would not have happened if you just let the two of them go at it, and they're being held up, and there's a lot of extenuating circumstances surrounding the spit that I wish that they would have taken into consideration rather than just banging him for the 3 games as if he was unprompted in spitting in Gabranson's face.
And the other part of that, too, is you just brought up the fighting aspect, Don, and this is something that I've spoke about several times. I'm actually a traditionalist, I guess, nowadays in the game, that I still feel that fighting does have a space for it. I believe that the players do still need to be able to patrol themselves. I mean, you look at the Brad Marchand incident. If there was an instigator penalty, somebody would have been in there tuning him up ASAP when he did something like that before. And if the league's not going to police them, then sometimes the players do need to take that responsibility. But the fact is if you are a league, to your point, Don, that wants to remove headshots from the game, you cannot allow fighting. You have to make up your mind. So if you fight, it's not a 5-minute major. You're out of the game. That's what they're doing now in junior leagues, right? Many of them, that if you fight, you're kicked out for the rest of the game. It's eliminating fighting a lot. The NHL, this is what I mean about the wavering on it. Who are you? What are you trying to accomplish? Because if you keep going back and forth this way and you never have any consistency, you don't have consistency in your officiating between one hit to another. We see it all the time. They have to get on a page and they have to take a stand about it one way or another. But I am the believer that in professional sports, listen, it's going to happen because it's professional sports. And yes, I want to look out to player safety, but you know, at the end of the day, if you're going to have fighting, then you're not too concerned actually about head trauma, because those are direct controlled shots. Yes. To somebody's head.
And so that's where you're kind of stuck in between. So interesting. He gets three games. I'm sure the Capitals can certainly survive it. He's a fourth line player, but it does set like a precedent. And as you said, when you go back to the playoffs, you know, a couple of years ago, you're getting licked in the face, which to me is, you know, something that was planned, right? It's premeditated.
Don, that's sexual misconduct. These players. And I'm not even joking about that. Think about your work day.
These
players are working. They are working. They are being paid to do a job. If somebody came up to you, if one of your co-hosts on your show came up to you and licked you, which I hope they never have done, but if they did, they would be fired immediately. And Brad Marchand gets a phone call. And I think there's even more to that, Don. And listen, I worked in Boston, and Bruins are an Original Six franchise, and Jeremy Jacobs is, you know, he's one of the most elite owners within the game. And the way that family has handled that organization is outstanding. He sets the example for ownership. But the fact of the matter is that you have to wonder if the Bruins get a little bit more leeway than some of these other teams do. And I really believe they do. It becomes he gets a phone call, Garnet Hathaway, as to your point, a fourth liner for the Caps, gets a three-game suspension. And we even see it in the GM meetings in Toronto. The Charlie Coyle goal, it's offside. Bruins lose that game to Montreal, and now we're talking about offside again in the GM meetings. And I'm just saying, these are, you know, the Bruins carry a lot of weight.
Well, the Bruins carry a lot of weight. The player carries a lot of weight. The postseason carries a lot of weight.
Yep.
And also, how unprecedented it was. There was nothing to compare it to. Nobody's ever seen anything like that before. And I'm not defending the league, but it was just, what do you compare it to? I mean, people were just so shocked. It's just so weird. So maybe I give them the benefit of the doubt there. And I think the spitting, and the NHL has always been, and I guess a lot of leagues are too, is the public perception. You know, I'm here in the States. I work at ESPN. And listen, no full disclosure, there's a disappointment level with a lot of people have with ESPN and hockey, how hockey is not on ESPN's radar, but Hathaway spits at Cole Branson, it's everywhere on ESPN. It's on SportsCenter, it's getting talked about on all their shows, it's being dissected more than any Connor McDavid goal or Fleury save last night for Vegas. So the league gets embarrassed because that's out there for everybody to see, and if they don't come down hard on them, it's all typical NHL not being able to control their players. So I kind of believe the fact that he's a fourth-line player, the fact that he got so much exposure, the fact that Washington's in first place and they can miss him for three games and nobody's going to blink an eye, that's a much easier thing to discipline than Brad Marchand in the playoffs for the Boston Bruins.
You are absolutely correct, sir.
Now, let's go to the GM meetings and the offside. That's got you red hot, too, because now nothing's going to change. We should say that, but they did absolutely discuss the offside.
Yes, they're looking at the language of it, and, you know, rightfully so, because the fact of the matter with offside is that this rule was made how many years ago, and we're seeing players being much more skilled, and it's in relation to the challenge, and what brought it forth again, they talked about it back in 2017, the language wasn't changed, the GMs, the owners didn't feel that was necessary at the time, and what brought it into play in 2017 was the fact that players have the ability on one skate to make the pass or take the shot when they're in the zone, but their other skate was up in the air over the blue line, which made them offside. So it's about the skill set. They didn't feel at that time that was enough to change the language. But when the Charlie Coyle goal happened against Montreal that was called back, we have to remember with the offside that a player who is in possession, control of the puck prior to entering the attacking zone, if they perceive the puck but they're in control of it, they're not offside. And Coyle, I would say, with his skill set, it was going in between his skates, but he was banging it back and forth, and he may have preceded that puck, but the GMs feel, I feel, I don't know about you, Don, but that should have been a good goal.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter, it wasn't. So what they're talking about is now when they go to Florida and they have their second set of meetings, I believe it's in March, when they go to Boca Raton, Hard Life, and they sit around the table again, they are going to look at the offside language, because they do feel at this point that the skill set of the players, it's time to take a look at it. Now, what does that mean, though, Don, when it comes to reviews and challenges and slowing the game down? Are we going to see more of it now? And that's my concern because, you know, as much as NFL is the machine that it is, when I watch it, I don't like how slow it can be sometimes. And I'm just worried about the speed of the game. If they go into starting to pick apart the language of offside, does it open the door to so much more?
Yeah, I get a little worried sometimes. I remember a couple of years ago, I guess it was the first year they did it, the Capitals were in Winnipeg. There must have been an 8-minute delay to determine whether it was offside or not. And Dave Maloney, who I do a lot of the games with, I'll do the Capital Ranger game with him tonight, that he feels like it saps the momentum of the building. You know, people mm-hmm. are mulling around what's going on. They don't show the highlight until after, you know, it's already been decided, because you don't see that directly on the blue line camera until after the fact. I got nowhere else to go, but still, everybody, baseball's going through it. You gotta be able to shorten the length of the game. You can't just stunt the momentum, look at these things. If it takes that long to look at, is it really worth it? And correct me if I'm wrong, Leah, I didn't hear there was any kind of an outcry when they put this rule in. Like, I was surprised they did, you know, with the offside replay and the challenge. It was like, came out of nowhere. I understood the goaltender interference. That was talked about, but, you know, this kind of came out of nowhere and tweaking it. I don't want to add more nuances to it that's going to lay the game any further than it already has.
And to that point, the fact that they have implemented now that the coaches' challenges, where they used to have two, now they can use as many as they want. If they're wrong, obviously they get the penalty. But so we could see coaches challenging 4 to 5 plays a game. And that's another issue. So I just, you know, the offside to me is, I've always been on that line where, yes, I want the call to be right, especially when we talk about the playoffs, especially when we talk about game-winning goals that determine so much when these guys are battling so hard. But at the same time, as a fan of the game and also as a broadcaster who watches it, it really does, to your point, absolutely zap the momentum. You're going from a team scoring, and especially if it's a home side, and all the electricity and everything that does for the team, to, oh, it's been called back. And, you know, I don't know. I get a little nervous, because the fact of the matter is the players are almost forcing their hands now because they're so freaking skilled.
I know. It is. This game is kind of getting away from all the tradition that we found, because we went through the clutching and grabbing, the size of the players. Now you're seeing 5-8 players being drafted, because it's just a completely different game now, and it's got to mature and evolve, and I think the league has to stay on top of that. All right, let's start with the negative, and that's Toronto. They have just not been able to get anything going here. A lot of rumors around Toronto maybe letting Mike Babcock go. Listen, I think he's an amazing coach. I do. But sometimes you're left to do the only thing there's left to do, right? And sometimes coaches get fired for that reason. Not that they're good, not that they're not good coaches, but what else can you do? And listen, Marner's been out. They've had their health issues, but, you know, you're up there in Canada. I know Toronto gets talked about, right, basically from coast to coast all the time. Is Mike Babcock's job in jeopardy?
So my question is, why isn't Kyle Dumas' job in jeopardy? Because the fact of the matter is that Kyle Dumas came in, and yes, he was successful in the American Hockey League, but this is his first time as a National Hockey League general manager. And you can only coach the team that you have. And right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs' biggest problem is that they are defensively weak. They collapse defensively in every game. And Mike Babcock has highlighted that, even publicly, to the point where him and Dumas seem to have gone head-to-head about his lack and his needs on his blue line. Now, I'm not saying that that gives him a pass for where they are, but it was the general manager who decided to put his big money and make that bold guarantee that they're not going to lose the Marners of the world, the Austin Matthews of the world, or the Nylanders, and he did it. He has them all tied up, but it was at the sacrifice of his blue line. So why is Babcock being the one who's put all the blame on? I understand the coach usually goes before the GM, but the question is, John, does Mike Babcock not have more clout than Kyle Dumas?
I would think so.
And that's the interesting part in this one in Toronto, in my little opinion.
Yeah, no, you're right. Listen, I don't think changing the general manager in the middle of the season helps a lot of people. I get that. But, and I also don't like the fact, if you fire the general manager, bring somebody else in that now has the coach. What if he doesn't want that coach? Unless you're going to promote, you know, from within. If, let's say, you decide Brendan Shanahan is going to be our general manager, that's a little bit different. But if you're going to bring somebody outside the organization, he may not be a Mike Babcock guy. And then we see this with the Jets here in New York, Leah, where, you know, you want the general manager to hire the coach. But sometimes when you let coaches go, you keep the general manager. Is he deserving to find the replacement for the head coach? If you fire the general manager, will the new GM want Mike Babcock as the coach? So I'd like to see them either both stay or both go.
And that's the problem here, Don, is that Kyle Dumas was not the one who hired Mike Babcock.
Right.
Brendan Shanahan was in control, and Lou Lamoriello was the GM that they brought after they signed Babcock to the massive 8-year deal for $56 million or whatever it was. But the fact is that, you know, the coach that if they were going to fire Babcock, I always say you fire him. And I don't think Toronto's going to do a coaching change. I don't think it's going to be now. They should have either done it last spring when they got ousted, or they're going to have to wait till the end of the season and figure it out. But it's also the fact that the coach that would replace him was DJ Smith. But DJ Smith is now in Ottawa.
That's right.
So they don't have him there just to slide into that position. That being said, Dumas did go out, and I'll give him a little credit. He goes out and gets Tyson Barry, who has been a phenomenal player. Three times in his year as a defenseman, 50 points, 50-plus points in his 8-year career. The fact is, though, it is not working in Toronto. He's going to be a UFA. He's looking to make things happen offensively to get points up for himself. You saw it last night against Vegas. He tried to stick check through the middle of the ice. He ended up turning it over. It ended up going in the back of the net past Freddie Anderson. He is not working there. He's not getting top power play time. They need to make that move and call that experiment over. So while Dumas did try to do a few things, they're not working in Toronto, and perhaps that is a Babcock issue. I don't know because I'm not in the room. But the other aspect of it is, does Babcock have the room? You know, he comes from an institution in Detroit where they let their players, Ken Holland used to let them bake in the American Hockey League with the Griffins. They came up later on in their careers. And so Babcock was a good coach for more mature players. That's what he had in Detroit, where he had so much of his success. He now has this very young group of a very different decade of players, and I wonder if he's too much of a closer for them and not enough of a developer. So that's the question about Babcock to me in Toronto.
Yeah, that's interesting to keep an eye on, because they're really dropping like a stone right now, and there's like major concern just that team finding a way to get into playoffs, never mind being the top three team in the Atlantic Division. Islanders are just shocking everybody, and last night was just unbelievable. Last night was one of those games, all right, you're going to lose, right? Pittsburgh's the one team that beat them. Pittsburgh ended their winning streak at 10 12 days ago. The Islanders managed to get a point, losing that game in overtime. It's 4-2. It's, you know, second half of the third period. And you're like, all right, Pittsburgh's got their number. And then they fight back and win the game in overtime. It's the first time in NHL history that a team has won back-to-back games when trailing by multiple goals with less than 7 minutes to play in regulation. It's just incredible. And it's really, it's not one guy. I mean, usually when you see a team go on kind of run, Lee, it's because somebody's playing out of their mind or a goaltender is standing on his head. That's not the case. Barry Trotz has alternated goaltenders throughout this streak, all right? They haven't really been 100% healthy. Every night it seems like it's a new hero. Boy, you tell me systems don't work. Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello have put together a system that got them to the second round last year, and right now I think has them maybe a legitimate team to come out of the Eastern Conference. How about that?
Listen, Don, I said it a couple of weeks ago when I started joining you that I think the biggest deal-breaker, or not deal-breaker, but the biggest influence on this team, because who loses John Tavares, your franchise player, and can do what they've done? And that's the infusion of Trotz and Lamoriello. And I really do believe that. But, I mean, I'm not down there, but, you know, and I know I always hear the things that, oh, hockey doesn't matter as much in the States, but I've lived in markets where it matters. And this Islanders team, to your point, is it's not a bunch of flashy superstars, but they have talent. And, you know, I look to just the Ryan Pulock goal last night. I mean, this is a kid that I've been watching since he was 16 with the Brandon Wheat Kings, and he had that same point shot when he was 16 on the power play, and he's always been such a good QB for it. He's a Manitoba kid. And, you know, he had some trouble working his way into the lineup under Ted Nolan. Certain coaches have their guys. But now Trotz comes in, and here he is. It seems like there's a lot of players that since Trotz came in that have flourished under him, whether it's system, whether it's the way he coaches. I'm not quite sure, but either way, he's getting it done. And to me, the Islanders are also just a really fun team to watch. And that means something. And, you know, I look at them and, you know, they've got the second most wins in the National Hockey League, and they still have four games in hand on the Washington Capitals. So where will they be when they make up that mileage?
I know.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really, and again, you can't say it's a fluke, because last year they were a top three team, competed for winning the division. They remind me a lot of the New Jersey Devils that Lou put together back in the 90s, where they're just defensively, they're very responsible. They can roll four lines, so anybody can score at any moment, right? And they can play you physical, they can play you finesse. I mean, I think unlike last year, when Lou didn't do anything, if he feels there's somebody that can be a game changer, he will make that deal. We saw it with the Devils, with Gilmore, with Anderchuk, with McGillney. He will make those types of moves. So if he thinks this team's ready to compete and there's a deal out there to be made at the deadline, Lou will make it.
He absolutely will make it. I agree with you 110%, because the fact of the matter is, when you look at this season so far, and we're hitting that mark where we're starting to see teams be able to have their identities, it usually takes 20 to 30 games before you really know what a team is. And I don't want to hear people talk about St. Louis anymore, because that was a major fluke. But the teams right now that you're seeing start to cultivate, and the identities that they're putting out there, we're starting to see who's going to have legs this season, and there is no way anyone can tell me that the New York Islanders are not in there. I mean, we talked about Buffalo the other week and how, yes, they went on a streak, but the fact of the matter is we both felt like they don't have the horses to get through it, and they don't. Jack Eichel is having to produce all of their offense right now, 100% of it, even getting in fights the other night. They don't have the horses, but certain teams are coming out, the Washington Capitals of the world, the Islanders, the Bruins. I mean, you know, Florida, we talked about them last week. Look what they've been doing now. And in the West, the Dallas Stars. We're finally starting to see that Dallas Stars team that we felt that they would be at the beginning of the season. So I think the real deals are about to come out for us in the next week, because if I'm not mistaken, American Thanksgiving is coming up. And as we know, it's a very big statistic that if you're in the playoff race, I think it's 76%. If you're in the playoff race by American Thanksgiving, you're going to be there when the season ends.
That's right, and they clearly are going to be there. So that just a great job across the board with what they're doing, for sure. And we mentioned it quickly, just that Flurry save, just unbelievable. And congratulations to him, 450 wins.
Absolutely. I believe he's getting close to Henrik Lundqvist right now on the all-time win list, if I'm not mistaken. Just, the King's going to have to watch himself.
Just three back, and he's four back from Curtis Joseph for fifth all-time in wins. And I understand that shootouts doctor that number up a little bit, but still, some of the guys that he's going to be competing, Flurry benefited from that the same as Henrik Lundqvist benefited from it, the same as Brodeur did, Wah with the institution of overtime and the 4-on-4. But still, to be able to be that close to a top five goaltender and to have multiple Stanley Cups and to be able to go to a Stanley Cup final with multiple organizations, I mean, he is clearly a Hall of Fame goaltender, and just because of how he's playing and the team he's playing on, sure, he's going to pass Hank for sure, and probably stay ahead of him too.
And the fact of the matter for me, Don, is when I think of Marc-Andre Fleury, you mentioned winning Stanley Cups. I mean, he goes to Pittsburgh, he's the guy, wins the cup, and then he's forced to take a back seat to Matt Murray, and he handles it. He handles being the backup. And then when Murray gets injured, steps in like a champ, gets them into the playoffs through his play. Murray comes back. He's forced to take that back seat again, and he did it. And then he's the pick that gets left to the Vegas Golden Knights in the expansion draft. After all of that for the organization, and what does he do? He handles it like a champ, like a true pro, goes to that organization, gives to the community, takes them to a Stanley Cup final, and he continues to shine. But I don't know about you, Don. I never feel like Marc-Andre Fleury gets put in that conversation of the great goaltender.
You're so right.
And I'm wondering why.
Well, because it was Crosby's team. It was Evgeny Malkin. He was on a loaded team, kind of the way everybody ignored Chris Osgood for winning those cups in Detroit, because the team was just so loaded.
That's a great example.
But
yeah,
you would think now in Vegas, right, that, and listen, but you had the concussion issues, and he did split some. They would have six different goaltenders in Vegas 2 years ago when they went to the Stanley Cup final, but it's time to give his due. It's longevity, the way he's fought back from the concussions, and he's definitely an all-time goaltender, and he's going to the Hall of Fame.
I would agree with you.
Chris says, hey, Don and Leah, on Monday, Darren Haynes posted an article in The Athletic that it might be time for the Flames to trade Johnny Gaudreau. Is this a realistic possibility? If so, could a trade to the Flyers make a lot of sense since he's from South Jersey? Chris, of course, is a Flyer fan. I'm a big fan of Johnny Gaudreau. He's one of my favorite players to watch. That thing is such a mess there in Calgary right now. Bill Peters is probably somebody that also might find himself getting fired. It's a mishmash of players, right? Lucic just does not fit in what they're trying to do there. So do you pull a trigger like that, Leah? Do you let go of your best player to try to get picks and try to rebuild? Is that where you're looking to do, or do you try to find a way to rebuild around this singular talent in Gaudreau?
So I read Darren's article, and I actually covered the Calgary Flames for two seasons. And so I know a little bit about this organization internally. And I would tell you that I would agree. I would say that Peter's job is definitely safe and that the general manager, Brad Treliving, isn't looking for that. I don't think that they are going to look to pull the trigger on Johnny Gaudreau. I mean, the guy's coming off a 36-goal, 99-point season. He's a perennial 20-plus goal scorer, and there's so much talent. But I would agree that it hasn't worked out the way that they like it to. But I don't think that's their problem. I think what is being reported is that if Travis Hamonic, who's a pending UFA this summer on the D, which you Islander fans are very familiar with, as he was traded from the Island, but it looks like they've had talks with the player that he wasn't happy with and also with his agent. And that seems to be the piece of the puzzle that they're looking to move. They're not as concerned about up front as they are with their defense. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I don't think they're ready to pull the trigger on Johnny Gaudreau yet.
Yeah, that's so tough. He's such a good player. But here's the thing. And he's got to toughen up a little bit. I thought he got roughed up in the playoffs last year. You know, they were slashing at his wrists. They were really playing a physical game with him. I think he needs to bulk up just a little bit more. If he's going to be that, I think he's right there. I mean, he's probably the most fun player to watch right up there with the McDavids. I just think even though we say that this is a league now where the younger players flourish and there's a lot more room, I would like to see him maybe toughen up his game just a little bit more.
And the other part of Gaudreau is when I was in Boston, I covered him with Hockey East in the area. He played, got his Hobie Baker for BC under now Hall of Famer head coach Jerry York.
Yes.
And, you know, Gaudreau, I'm going to say this, when you talk about him beefing up, I don't think he can, Don. I mean, I've stood beside him.
I know.
And I'm not a big woman, and I'm 5'7". He's my height, first of all. He's lying. He's lying in his bio because he's my height. And he's almost my stature. And that's not an insult. That's just how he's built. And it's what gives him his grace and his skill on the ice. But I don't think he can be fought. So that could just be something where, you know, it just may not happen for him. Although he has been pretty sustainable in his career when he hasn't missed a lot of games to injury. He's played 82 in almost all of his seasons. So he has been able to stay up. But I understand what you're saying, because what happens in the playoffs, and we saw last year, is your top lines get rubbed out because they're keyed on, and you need that bottom six to step up, but you also need your top six guys to be able to fight through having those guys and that series hockey, right? Like, that might be part of the problem, is the Flames aren't built for series hockey. And people always look at me and say, well, you know, that doesn't make any sense, but it does. Playing one game against a team is very different than going into a seven-game series. There becomes matchups, and the way that people are pinned up against certain players, and that doesn't, you know, alleviate itself until the series is over. And there's heavy teams like the Blues and back in the day like the Chicago Blackhawks and LA Kings, and that's why they were so successful, because they were built to withstand a series. And I don't see that in the Flames right now.
Neux asks, thoughts on Taylor Hall to St. Louis? I don't know why St. Louis would do it. I mean, no, seriously, the whole idea was they need to replace Tarasenko. They haven't missed Tarasenko. They're in first place. They look every bit as good as they did in the second half of last year. So are they just going to ride it out the way it is, or is there a possibility? Because I think the Devils, the way they continue to play, it's not happening this year. All right. And he's clearly, it's in his head. He's only got two goals this year, Hall. I think that they're probably going to, if they don't feel that he's going to re-sign, will most likely trade him at the deadline. Do you think St. Louis could be a destination? And do you think the New Jersey Devils will trade him?
I doubt it. It would cost St. Louis so much. The Devils are going to get top quality. I mean, this is a player that's a year removed from being the Hart Trophy winner, that has a ton of skill and is going to be a great acquisition for any team. And St. Louis just, and to your point, Don, they don't need him. And Tarasenko, it's not like he's gone forever. I mean, yes, he's had the shoulder surgery and he's out for quite an extensive time, but, you know, he's going to be back, and they haven't missed him. I mean, you always miss a player like Tarasenko. He's such a talent, but they've been able to get it done. So I don't think that's a likely location for him to land. And I don't think that picture will really become clear until the trade deadline, because I don't think that Ray Shiro for the Devils as a general manager is going to make or pull the trigger on anything until it gets closer to the deadline.
Right,
because I do believe that they would like to keep him. So they're probably going to try to see what they can do with the relationship part of the team and with Taylor to try to get him to stay. But if not, then he has no other options than to trade him.
Sharks finally cooled off by the Edmonton Oilers last night, but the story is Connor McDavid. 43 points in 23 games. He had a goal and two assists last night. I mean, is this a play? Could he get 160 points? I mean, that's what he's on pace for.
I mean, like, that sounds ridiculous. That's why I laugh, right? Like, who's on pace for 160 points this early into the season? But that's what he is. I mean, yeah, because I'm not going to bet against Connor McDavid ever. And I don't know if that's a very good answer, but that's how I feel. He totally could get 160 points. I don't think he will, but my goodness. I mean, there's just, when you watch him, it's amazing how as soon as he just hits on the ice, you can't help but just stare at him and watch him play as if there's like a spotlight on him, because he's just so, the way he skates and the way he moves and his ability for offense. I've never in my hockey watching life experienced a player like Connor McDavid.
All right, let's rapid fire through a few of these before we let you go. Jim says, why is the NHL set schedule so Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday heavy? Is it arena availability, deferring to the NBA for Wednesday, Friday, avoiding Sunday until after the Super Bowl, preparing for the holidays, All-Star break? He wants to know why.
Well, it's funny because at the GM meetings, they brought in the actual schedule maker because there's been so many complaints about the schedule this season.
Yes.
And he took them through an entire presentation about how they do it. It's a massive undertaking, but it's also the teams give them input into when they want their games in their building. And so the schedule maker said, we need this from you in order to make it work. So they've been educated on it now. But I'll tell you right now, the Saturday night schedule is heavy because, hello, up here in Canada,
that's
it's
right.
Hockey night in Canada, baby.
That's right.
And that is one of the biggest infusions of cash that they have, to the point of $5.2 billion from Rogers Sportsnet. So Saturday's not going away. I hate to tell everybody.
No, and it makes sense. And the NBA has something to do with it, too, because the NBA,
absolutely,
they've got the doubleheaders on Wednesday and Friday. So that they want to have a lot of games and a lot of options there for ESPN, and that's usually how it works. I mean, the Rangers kind of changed that around a little bit because of the fact that they can play Sundays. Certain teams can go against the NFL. Like last week, the Rangers played a 1 o'clock game at home on a Saturday, on a Sunday. A lot of markets can't do that on an NFL Sunday. The Rangers can. So that kind of bucks the trend, but it's heavy on Saturday. It's heavy on Thursdays and Tuesdays because the NBA seems to be heavier on Wednesdays and Fridays and Sundays. So that's why the schedule's that way. But I'm glad that, you know, Steve Hatzepetros has been on the hot seat because there's just been so much of a discrepancy. And a lot of that just comes from the fact that we're sitting here deep into November. You just acknowledged the fact that that American Thanksgiving is always that line of demarcation, right? So how can the Islanders have four games in hand on the Washington Capitals this deep into the season? You know, how can you have that kind of a discrepancy with teams that are battling with each other? So that's what's aggravating a lot of people about the schedule. So hopefully that can get cleared up. Jake asks, heard about the possibility of utilizing maintenance with Bergeron to try to keep him healthy. What are your thoughts on players' maintenance days?
I think it's really important. I think that we're starting to see this happen more in the NHL, especially in the goaltending position. We're starting to see teams platoon their goaltenders, because if you look at the last three Stanley Cups, the goaltenders that have been in it, whether it's been Holtby or Marc-Andre Fleury, and whether with Fleury it was due to injury, but they've only played anywhere from 45 to 57 games. So they haven't had that load on them, load management, as they call it. And therefore, they've been ready and had more ability and not been tired by the time they got to the playoffs. I think that is starting to go towards the forward core and the defensemen as well. And it should be, especially with, you know, the fact of the matter is Patrice Bergeron is not an old person, but in the game of hockey, he's on the wrong side of 30. And so you do have to start watching it, because Bergeron has had major injuries throughout his career, including a punctured lung in the 2013 Cup. So his body has been through it. So I think it's a very smart move, if it's Cassidy doing it or if it's somebody above him, I'm not sure, or if it's even the player telling them, because you don't know, it's not the player saying, listen, I need a few nights off. I doubt that's the case with Bergeron because he's such a horse, but I think it's a very smart idea by the Bruins because they're winning and they have the ability to do it, so why not have your horses fresh for the spring when it really matters?
And in closing, thoughts and prayers to Bobby Ryan and what he's going through.
Absolutely.
And Tom was nice enough to send a tweet of an article that he wrote in the Players Tribune back in 2016 after he lost his mom and the battles that they went through with an abusive father and how they had to move to California and change their names and everything. He's been through so much. So you just hope nothing but the best for him for sure. Hockey has to come second as far as just getting his life in order.
And that's the one thing that I will say I think the NHL does very well is their programs between the league and the PA are set up very well to make sure that mental health has become a major part of the conversation.
All right, we got a lot of games tonight, or actually we don't have a lot of games tonight. That's just a knee-jerk reaction to something I usually say. There's only two games tonight. Getting more aggravated about the schedule again. I'll be at the Garden for the Rangers and the Capitals. The Canadians, they had a tough loss last night to the Columbus Blue Jackets. They'll look to bounce back against an Ottawa team. You're just talking about Smith. And they've done a decent job there. I mean, many pegged them to be the worst team in the league, and you know Ottawa's actually been a pain in the neck to play.
Yes, they have, and I do credit the coach for that. DJ Smith, everybody talked about it. He was going to be the next NHL coach, and, you know, he comes from, got a long history of success. He had it with the Windsor Spitfires as well in the Ontario Hockey League, taking them to multiple championship titles. So, I mean, I credit it to him more than anything because that Ottawa roster, as we look at it, is not full of superstars, but he's getting a lot out of them at this moment.
All right, we'll talk to you again next Wednesday, right?
All right, Don. Sounds good. Enjoy your call tonight.
All right. Thank you so much, and enjoy all the stuff that you're doing. We'll talk to Leah again next Wednesday. I'll be back with you again on Friday. Friday will be a busy day. We'll have the recap all the games from Thursday. We'll have our top five of the week. Want to reach out to me? The best way to do it, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Back with you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.